A roadmap for Doge's 30% budget cut. Commentary. In a recent Wall Street Journal op-ed, Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy laid out their vision for the new Department of Government Efficiency they will head within the Trump White House. They don't yet have details. But the vision has a three-part approach: regulatory rescissions, administrative reductions, and cost savings. With politicians, it's often hard to know what is solid conviction and what is bluster for future bargaining. With Donald Trump, it's always hard to know. He wants to renew the 2017 tax cuts, which lowered income and corporate taxes until 2025. But he also wants to tax imports at 10% to 20%, which is the equivalent of a consumption tax on an American economy that is hungry for imported goods. Mr. Trump wants to cut red tape and federal spending, but he also wants to increase spending on defense and mass deportations. Amidst all this, Messrs. Musk and Ramaswamy have fruited the lofty goal of a 30% cut in federal spending. The federal budget was $6.2 trillion for FY23. This represents almost 23% of GDP, to which we can add 13% spent by states and local governments. To this, we can also add the 10% of GDP in annual compliance cost with federal regulations, as estimated by the Competitive Enterprise Institute. This total means that, for every dollar of economic activity, fully 46 cents are controlled, directly or indirectly, by politicians and bureaucrats. And only 54 cents of each economic dollar are in the hands of American consumers, families, and entrepreneurs. As of November 2024, the national debt is at 120% plus of GDP, and interest on the debt is the fourth biggest budget item. Clearly, America has a fiscal problem. Before we examine possible budget cuts, let us see where that whopping $6.2 trillion is going. First, we must distinguish between mandatory spending and discretionary spending. Mandatory spending has been set in motion by Congress without the need for annual negotiation or reauthorization. Discretionary spending must be legislated in political jockeying between the Congress and the president. I propose three options for budget cuts, from the bold to the marginal. 1. The Constitution. I hate having to repeat it over and over again, but the American people and the political class seem to have forgotten that the U.S. Constitution is different. Most other constitutions of the world are documents of assumed powers. Governments are allowed to do anything except that which is prohibited by the Constitution. The U.S. Constitution, however, is one of limited and enumerated powers. It may not do anything except that which is authorized by the Constitution. Article 1, Section 8 grants a bit over a dozen legislative powers to Congress. According to Article 1, Section 8, the Congress has power over the following only: taxes and import duties, borrowing, regulation of commerce among the states and internationally, establish uniform laws of immigration and bankruptcy, coin money, fix standards of weights and measures and grant patents, punish counterfeiting and piracy, establish post offices and postal roads, to constitute tribunals inferior to the Supreme Court, declare war and maintain and regulate armed forces, to control the District of Columbia and other federal properties. Lest there be any doubt about enumeration and limitation, the 10th Amendment reads as follows: the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or the people. It should be obvious, then, that the vast majority of federal expenditures are not authorized by the Constitution. As such, they are prohibited and unconstitutional. Only a small percentage of actual federal spending is authorized by the Constitution: defense, operating and retirement expenses for federal employees, support to veterans, international relations, and justice. If we squint very hard at the Constitution, we could conceivably see transportation, health, and the environment, if we suppose generously that such expenditures are authorized under the Commerce Clause, as functions that cannot be handled by the individual states. Even then, we find ourselves at $1.72 trillion, or 27.7% of the current budget. This would represent savings of $4.48 trillion, or 72.3% of the budget that could be returned from the unconstitutional hands of politicians and bureaucrats back to American families, consumers, and entrepreneurs. Unfortunately, the president lacks the authority to veto mandatory spending and merely enjoys veto power over discretionary spending bills. And for all his talk of reducing red tape, Mr. Trump has yet to show a libertarian or constitutional soul. It is thus unlikely that we will end up with a North American version of a chainsaw-wielding Javier Milei of Argentina. 2. Big ticket items. A return to constitutional constraints would be lovely, but it is not in the realm of the politically possible. The second option would be to start with the low-hanging fruit of Social Security and Medicare. Social Security was born in 1935 as part of FDR's New Deal, and Medicare came to be in 1965 as part of LBJ's Great Society. Neither of these programs is means-tested. Social Security might have been necessary in 1935, but financial markets have evolved drastically since 1935. Americans now have easy, low-cost, and convenient access to mutual funds, and especially index funds that track the market without investor savvy. The federal government could easily get rid of the low-yield, pay-as-you-go Social Security pension scheme and replace it with a high-yield, portable, individually funded retirement plan. The Chilean plan of mandatory 10% contributions to a private fund would be a simple start. Likewise, insurance markets can take care of the majority of American retirees. Simply stated, most Americans don't need Social Security and Medicare. These two big-ticket items eat about one-third of the federal budget. They are unconstitutional, and they are unnecessary. Again, as a student of David Baido, Alexis de Tocqueville, Henry Hazlitt, Marvin Olasky, economics and history, I have learned the superiority of private charity over government welfare. But as a temporary solution, Social Security and Medicare could easily be privatized, with a portion replaced by means-test programs with a much smaller cost. Currently, about 20% of Americans receive federal welfare or Medicaid. Setting aside details, we can easily imagine privatizing pensions and healthcare for the other 80%, with an 80% cut in Social Security and Medicare for a total of $1.67 trillion in savings. This would still not be constitutionally authorized, but it would represent almost one-third of the federal budget. As a bonus, a privately funded retirement plan would represent a surge in investment and thus of economic activity and tax revenue. The lower expenses would mean the national debt would not increase as much and pressure on interest payments would be relieved. The true savings would thus exceed one-third. Unfortunately, all retirees, rich and poor, have their snout in the federal trough. This was the political genius and the fiscal disaster of universal programs. Social Security and Medicare costs are politically dangerous, and Mr. Trump has already promised he would not touch the two biggest federal expenditures. 3. Marginal cuts. Without pushing constitutional respect or cutting the low-hanging fruit of big and outdated universal programs, the federal government could still save at the margin. As mentioned above, the Competitive Enterprise Institute has calculated that 10% of GDP is spent each year on compliance with federal regulations. A Mercatus Center study estimates that, if regulations had stayed steady at the 1949 level, the American economy would be a whopping 3.5 times stronger. What is more, regulation is regressive. Without attacking the budget directly, DOGE could take a serious axe to federal regulation, to great effect. Finally, the Cato Institute has proposed a collection of small cuts that would amount to a serious $1 trillion to $2 trillion in savings. It would be ideal, of course, to return to the Constitution for reasons of rule of law as much as for fiscal prudence. More local responsibility, more market competition, less bureaucratic waste, more reliance on an efficient and human civil society over a wasteful and anonymous federal machine to help the poor. These would all be positive developments that would restore America's fiscal health while actually tackling poverty. In the meantime, a 30% budget cut is within grasp, and it would represent a return to federal spending, not in some distant past, but as recently as 2001. From the American Institute for Economic Research,